Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kutas Twa Kashmalavidam Vishame Samupastitam Anaya Jushtam Asvargyam Akirti Karam Arjuna. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to higher planets, but to infamy." Purport: Krishna and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are identical. Therefore, Lord Krishna is referred to as Bhagavan throughout the Gita. Bhagavan is the ultimate in the Absolute Truth. Absolute Truth is realized in three phases of understanding, namely Brahman, or the impersonal, all-pervasive spirit, Paramatma, or the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart of all living entities, and Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this conception of the Absolute Truth is explained thus: Vadanti tattva-vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabhyate. The Absolute Truth is realized in three phases of understanding by the knower of the Absolute Truth, and all of them are identical. Such phases of the Absolute Truth are expressed as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. These three divine aspects can be explained by the example of the sun, which also has three different aspects, namely the sunshine, the sun's surface, and the sun planet itself. One who studies the sunshine only is the preliminary student. One who understands the sun's surface is further advanced, and one who can enter into the sun planet is the highest. Ordinary students who are satisfied by simply understanding the sunshine, its universal pervasiveness and the glaring effulgence of its impersonal nature, may be compared to those who can realize only the Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth. The student who has advanced still further can know the sun disk, which is compared to knowledge of the Paramatma feature of the Absolute Truth. And the student who can enter into the heart of the sun planet is compared to those who realize the personal features of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, the bhaktas, or the transcendentalists who have realized the Bhagavan feature of the Absolute Truth, are the topmost transcendentalists, although all students who are engaged in the study of the Absolute Truth are engaged in the same subject matter. The sunshine, the sun disk, and the inner affairs of the sun planet cannot be separated from one another, and yet the students of the three different phases are not in the same category. The Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation, is called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are very rich, very powerful, very beautiful, very famous, very learned, and very much detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc. entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No living entity, including Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Narayana, can possess opulences as fully as Krishna. Therefore, it is concluded in the Brahma Samhita by Lord Brahma himself that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to or above him. He is the primeval Lord of Bhagavan, known as Govinda, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. Ishvara Paramah Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. There are many personalities possessing the qualities of Bhagavan, but Krishna is the supreme because none can excel him. He is the Supreme Person, and his body is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the primeval Lord Govinda, and the cause of all causes. In the Bhagavatam also, there is a list of many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna is described as the original personality of Godhead from whom many, many incarnations and personalities of Godhead expand. Ete chang shakala pungsa Krishnastu bhagavan swayam Indrari vayakulam lokam mridayanti yuge yuge. Who's that chanting? You know the verse? Or are you just reading along? It's good to know this verse, important verse. All the lists of the incarnations of Godhead submitted herewith are either plenary expansions or parts of the plenary expansions of the Supreme Godhead. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Therefore, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the source of both the Supersoul and the Impersonal Brahman. In the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Arjuna's lamentation for his kinsmen is certainly unbecoming. And therefore, Krishna expressed his surprise with the word kutaha. Where from? Such impurities were never expected from a person belonging to the civilized class of men known as Aryans. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. Persons who are led by the material conception of life do not know that the aim of life is realization of the Absolute Truth, Vishnu or Bhagavan, and they are captivated by the external features of the material world, and therefore they do not know what liberation is. Persons who have no knowledge of liberation from material bondage are called non-Aryans. Although Arjuna was a Kshatriya, he was deviating from his prescribed duties by declining to fight. This act of cowardice is described as befitting the non-Aryans. Such deviation from duty does not help one in the progress of spiritual life, nor does it even give one the opportunity to become famous in this world. Lord Krishna did not approve of the so-called compassion of Arjuna for his kinsmen. Shri Bhagavan uvacha kutastva kashmalamidam vishame samupastitam anarya drishtam asvargyam akirti karamarjuna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. They lead not to the higher planets but to infamy." Seems like quite a long purport, isn't it? 2.5 pages. Well, it's not very much actually, considering that we could this whole book could just be the purport to this one verse. Srila Prabhupada has summarized some of the important points here in discussing this verse. This is the first time in Bhagavad Gita that we find the words Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said. And Srila Prabhupada has discussed the significance of the word Bhagavan in this purport, which is why I chose it to discuss this. Because we're just before we started. Am I going too fast for you there, Ram Lakshman Prabhu? Am I speaking too quickly?
No, okay.
Just before we started the class, we had a little discussion with our friend here. What's your name? Sorry?
Miss Raja.
Raja, okay. He has a t-shirt with a big picture of Mohandas Jay Gandhi.
Gandhi.
1909 to 1948. Okay. 1869. Oh, he was quite old. It's about time for him to go anyway. So I was just mentioning how Srila Prabhupada appreciated some of the things he said. He was talking about simple living, and Prabhupada especially appreciated that. He was in favor of India having simple village civilization. but he also made many mistakes. Now, our subject matter is not Mohan Das Gandhi. Our subject matter is Mohan. Mohan means Krishna. But just this discussion came up, and Raja said, well, anyone can make a mistake. And that's why I said, well, that's why we read Bhagavad Gita. Because Krishna doesn't make a mistake. Srila Prabhupada discusses in the introduction to this edition of Bhagavad Gita that if we think that Krishna is an ordinary person, then there's no use in reading his book. What's the use of if Krishna's on the same level as us, then what's the use of discussing Bhagavad Gita? We could take it as an interesting book of poetry or something like that, but we couldn't take it as a guide for our life. It's just like even today there are so many people who study Shakespeare, but they don't. Shakespeare had quite a lot of good insights into human nature, it seems, and many of his sayings are famous in English even today. A rose would smell as sweet by any other name, or something is rotten in the state of Denmark, and these are all famous sayings of Shakespeare. But we don't think like he's a perfect self-realized person. He had some insights into, like I say, into human. So many people have insights into human nature. Even John Lennon, who was, you know, a sinful person in many ways, but he said some things. So one I quote is some things of which can be applied. That one thing I often quote is, living is easy with eyes closed. If you just pretend that there's everything's okay, then you can imagine everything's okay. So by the grace of Krishna, matasmritir jnanam apohanam cha, from Krishna comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness, then certain people, they have some insights into some aspects. Quote is, some things of which can be applied, that one thing I often quote is, living is easy with eyes closed. If you just pretend that there's everything's okay, then you can imagine everything's okay. So by the grace of Krishna, matasmritir jnanam apohanam cha, from Krishna comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness, then certain people, they have some insights into some aspects of material existence. But that doesn't mean that they're perfect and they know everything. Just like Srila Prabhupada, well, we accept Prabhupada as a perfect person. Why? Because he repeated what Krishna said, and what Krishna says is perfect. Now, Prabhupada, he accepted that Mahatma Gandhi had some good ideas, because he didn't want this industrial development. He could see that that was the cause of the downfall of human civilization. Srila Prabhupada also appreciated that by his brahmacharya, Mohan Das Gandhi got so much power that he could dislodge the British. Although actually he also said that the dislodgement of the British was more due to Subhas Chandra Bose than Mahatma Gandhi. Anyway, the point is that, well, he did say some good things. But like he wrote in his autobiography, which is called Experiments with Truth, and Prabhupada also said, that's not a good title for a book. Truth is not something to be experimented with. Truth is as it is. We can't find it by experiment. But he wrote in that book that, I do not believe that anyone... Got it? Word for experiment? Like a scientific experiment, you try and find out by trial and error. Or intelligent trial and error. So he said, I do not believe that any person such as Krishna exists. Then why are you reading Bhagavad Gita? If you don't accept that what Krishna says is authoritative, then what it is, that's what most of the scholars do. They think, well, Bhagavad Gita, no, it's kind of good. But they think there's some good ideas and we can add our ideas, and between me and Krishna we can come up with something good. Just like this Dr. Radha Krishna made his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, in which in the last verse of the ninth chapter, what's the last verse of the ninth chapter, your sloka wizard? It's a famous verse. Madhyaji Mam Namaskaru, then? That's in the 18th chapter. It's a little bit different in the 9th chapter. Mame Vaishasi Yukt Vaivam Atmanam Matparayana. Means more or less the same thing. So always think of me. And Dr. Radha Krishna in his commentary said it is not to the person Krishna, it's not the person Krishna that we should think of, but the unborn eternal within Krishna. And Prabhupada really cut him up. He wrote a series of articles just completely smashing this idea that it's not this statement of Dr. Radha Krishna's. So one reason that Srila Prabhupada said is that, you know, he's more or less saying that Krishna doesn't know how to express himself properly, and Dr. Radha Krishna has to clarify because Krishna hasn't said what he should have said, but I'm saying what he should have said. But then this way of taking Bhagavad Gita, it's not explaining Bhagavad Gita, it's actually insulting Krishna. There's no use to study Bhagavad Gita unless we accept Krishna as an authority. As what kind of an authority means he doesn't make mistakes. That's why we study in the school or the college, because we presume that the teachers know the subject and we can learn from them. If you ask me to explain how E equals MC squared, I wouldn't have a clue what to say. You have to go to someone who's studied the subject, and you have to take some initial training before you can even begin to understand it. You got that E equals MC squared in Thai? It's a tough one. Probably the same thing. Probably the scientists in Thailand. Are there any scientists in Thailand? There must be someone.
I just gave the conclusion.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So you have to go to someone who knows. One time, one person was introduced to Srila Prabhupada as a professor, and Prabhupada asked, what are you teaching? He said, Hinduism. And Srila Prabhupada said, what do you mean by Hinduism? And the professor said, I don't know. He thought it was a very clever answer to give. And Prabhupada said, he turned to Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was Swarup Damodar Brahmacharya at the time, and said, well, what do you call someone who purports to teach something that he doesn't know? And Swarup Damodar Brahmacharya said, a cheater. Prabhupada said, you see, he's also a PhD. He said, you're a cheater. And the man became very angry. So the point is, if you're going to teach something, you should know. And we can learn from, we're studying from Krishna. We're not reading Mohandas Gandhi's autobiography here. We're studying Bhagavad Gita. Because what Krishna says is authoritative. We accept him as Bhagavan, the Supreme, who knows everything, as he states in Bhagavad Gita himself. Vedaham samatitani. Say it? No? Okay, I thought you were saying Vatamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mahatu vedana kaschana. Lord Krishna says, I know everything, past, present and future, but me no one knows. So Krishna knows everything. That's stated in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. He knows everything, directly and indirectly. He's inside everything, he's outside everything. He's inside everything. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. He's the smallest of the small and the biggest of the big. That means he's very difficult to see. If he's so small, we can't see. We can't see the atom. It's too small for us to see. Krishna's inside the atom. He's also too big for us to see. If something's very big, you can't... Just like if you're standing right next to a mountain, say there's a huge mountain and you're standing, it goes straight up. You can only see a tiny part of it. You can't make out the form of the mountain. We live on the earth, but we can't see the form of the earth. That's why people used to think the earth is flat, because that's all they could see. You can't see the... If you're too close to something which is very big, you can't make out what it is. So, it's very difficult to understand Krishna. He knows everything. We can understand Krishna when he explains himself in Bhagavad Gita. But the first condition to accept Bhagavad Gita is to accept that it is scripture. It is correct. What Krishna says is correct. It's not just that Krishna was someone and I'm someone and he had his opinion. He's a good philosopher, but I'm also a pretty good philosopher, so, you know, he has his ideas and I have my ideas. And okay, we'll give him credit, he's quite good, but I'm pretty good too. I know a lot. But this way we cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. That was Mohandas Gandhi's mistake. That Prabhupada said that one of his mistakes was that he is known as a great student of Bhagavad Gita. He was trying to teach ahimsa, non-violence, on the basis of Bhagavad Gita. Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks of ahimsa as a good quality. But at the same time, he's encouraging Arjuna to fight. So absolute ahimsa is impossible in this material world. Because it's a world of violence. If we say from now on, we'll make a law that no one should have any non-violence. It sounds like a good idea. No one should have any violence. Well, how can you enforce it? If you make a law that there should be no violence, when someone doesn't want to follow it, well, how can you enforce that law? You can only enforce law by violence. And that's why there must be violence in society, because if you don't, unless you have the police, I mean, the police might be corrupt, like in this country, but unless they're there, then the criminals, they just have a free range to do whatever they like. In most countries, it's illegal for the police to go on strike. In somewhere in America, I think in Detroit or someplace, some years ago, the police went on strike, and immediately all the shops were looted. People were bringing trucks and just looting the shops, smashing all the windows. As soon as they found out the police were on strike. And normally, probably most of those people wouldn't have been, they wouldn't have normally dared to do it in broad daylight. Another thing, when there's New Orleans, this city got completely flooded last year, was it? It was only a year ago, something. Then there were just people going around and looting everything. And the police had to just shoot them, because whatever police could get in there, because there was no law and order, then they just, you know, they took advantage of the situation. So, if there's not the threat of violence, then bad elements will take advantage. If India, if they declared that now we're disbanding our army, navy, and air force, and we're not going to fight, then immediately Pakistan would just come in and take over. And then they would enact all kinds of, the Indian government could say non-violence, but then immediately another government would take over that believes in violence. So it wouldn't work. It's impractical in this material world. It's a nice idea. But to have absolute, we should cultivate in ourselves the quality of non-violence, but practically someone has to be violent. That's what Krishna was saying to Arjuna. You have to fight. Unless you fight, the bad elements will take over. Someone has to do that. So, when Krishna encourages Arjuna to fight, you may think, well, that's very bad. But that the whole Bhagavad Gita is to convince Arjuna that he should fight, and it's good, and it's proper, and if he doesn't fight in this situation, it's very bad. So, Lord Krishna is explaining, he doesn't say, look, I'm God, you just do what I say. But he convinces Arjuna intelligently, but at the same time, there's discussion of many philosophical topics, and we have to accept that what Krishna says is correct. Just like there are many points in Bhagavad Gita that, just like now, we've discussed about non-violence. So it's something which we can tangibly understand. It's not a difficult thing to understand that violence is required, unless everyone in society is a saint, but they're not. So, alright, we can understand that, but some things in Bhagavad Gita we have to accept on Krishna's authority, just like Arjuna himself, at least superficially, appeared to have a problem when Krishna said, Idam vivasvate yogam proktavana humabeyam vivasvamanabe prahu manarikshvakabe brevid. Lord Krishna told Arjuna that this knowledge I spoke to Vivasvan, the sun god, who spoke it to Manu, who spoke it to Ikshvaku. And then Arjuna, he interrupted and he said, Katame tan vijaniyam tomado proktavaniti. Aparam bhavato janma param janma rasvataha. Katame tan vijaniyam tomado proktavaniti. He said that, wait a minute, you're my age. You're just born recently, whereas Vibhisvara, the sun god, he's much older than you. So if you're saying that the sun god spoke to Manu, who spoke to Ikshvaku, and you spoke first of all to the sun god in times long past, well, how can I understand that? Because you're just recently born. So then Krishna explained to Arjuna that Bahuni may be a titani, but Jamani Tavacharjuna. Tani aham veda sarvani, natvam veda parat. That I've had many births and so have you. Theoretically, I've had many births and so have you. I remember them all, but you don't. So, before this, this comes up in the beginning of the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, Lord Krishna explains about the nature of the soul. But here he brings it right down to their personal lives. I've had many births and so have you. But I remember and you don't, because he's Bhagavan and Arjuna is a jiva. So we can't experimentally prove that. We just have to accept what Krishna says, that he is the Supreme Lord. And all of this information is later summarized by Arjuna when he says to Krishna that Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Avadideva Majam Vibhu. Arjuna says to Krishna, well, yes, you are the Supreme. You are the Supreme Spiritual Principle. You are the Supreme Abode. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. You are the Supreme Pure. You are the eternal divine person, the origin of all the demigods, unborn and supreme. But it's not just me who's saying this, because Ahastvam Rishi Asarve, all the great rishis, they say, and he gives an example, Devarshi Narad, Asita, Devala, Vyas, they all accept that Krishna is supreme. So this is the way we have to accept Bhagavad Gita, that what Krishna says, we have to accept. He doesn't make mistakes. It's true, everyone in this world makes mistakes. That's why any spiritual teacher, if they're going to teach, they have to quote Shastra, because Shastra means no mistakes. That we have to accept. Shastra is the word of God. And Shastra has to be received through the chain of perfect devotees. Because otherwise someone can quote Shastra and mis-explain it according to their own interpretation. That's what, you see, we accept Prabhupada as a perfect devotee. But he always quoted Shastra for whatever he said. Because that is the standard. Now, if you want to be nitpicking, you know this term nitpicking means? It means looking for little faults. You want deliberately looking for faults. Now you could say that Srila Prabhupada made mistakes. Actually, one should never say about one's spiritual master or about the great sadhu. But once even one of Prabhupada's most faithful disciples, he asked that Prabhupada that it appears that sometimes the spiritual master makes mistakes. So how do we understand this? Just like, for instance, Srila Prabhupada's English was not standard English. You could say there were mistakes in the grammar. We shouldn't make a topic that Prabhupada made mistakes, but I'm just saying we should properly understand philosophically these points. Otherwise, if someone says that, well, Srila Prabhupada, from the standpoint of modern English, his grammar wasn't always perfect, so we should go to the university and tell them to change the grammar book. But Prabhupada wouldn't tell us to do that. He told his disciples to edit the books. That's a more practical suggestion. So we can say, well, if he's perfect, then how does he make mistakes? But Prabhupada explained that the perfection of the spiritual master is not that he's not God himself, but he faithfully presents the message of God. And he might make, actually Prabhupada, even in material matters, really, I mean, he was brilliant in all aspects. But sometimes he might, just like for instance, he chastised one devotee once, that why is he talking with women, he's a brahmachari. Then the devotee said, well, actually he's not a brahmachari, he's someone told Prabhupada, actually he's a grihastha. That was Harishori Prabhu. He was wearing white, but Prabhupada had never seen his wife. And he didn't know. So, and Prabhupada said, oh, okay, I didn't know that. So Prabhupada didn't say, no, I'm spiritual master, I don't make mistakes. And so all of a sudden, he's not a grihastha, he has to give up his wife or something like that. But Prabhupada just accepted. So, this should be properly understood, that if the spiritual master, he may have some misunderstanding, materially or something like that, but his perfection is that he presents Krishna consciousness as received from the previous acharyas, who present everything based on Shastra. And Shastra means which is given by God and which is without mistakes. And it may appear to us that there are mistakes in Shastra. Just like you may say that someone might say, well, Krishna told Arjuna to fight. I think Krishna made a mistake. But if we say that, we made a mistake. We are a rascal. Because what Krishna says is correct. And if we accept what Krishna says, then we become liberated from this material world. We become perfect. We develop love for Krishna. If we think that Krishna made a mistake and Krishna is wrong, then we are wrong. So the basic faith has to be there that what Krishna says is correct. On that premise, on that basis, we can start to understand Bhagavad Gita and all the scriptures and make spiritual advancement. So this is the mistake of Hinduism or any ism. In one sense, in a very broad sense, we could say this Krishna conscious movement is Hinduism. Only in a very broad sense. In as much as culturally, from an external point of view, it could be considered Hinduism. But from an ontological position, in other words, from the position of what actually Krishna conscious is, Hinduism is some conglomeration of ideas and practices not very definable. That professor of Hinduism said, I don't know what Hinduism is. That he thought was a kind of clever answer. Which is, has its origin, you could say, has its origin in Shastra. But it's much deviated in many ways from Shastra nowadays. So that's why we don't like to identify philosophically with Hinduism. There's so many mistakes, although culturally you could say, from the sociological point of view, you could say that this movement is Hinduism. But then sociology is only concerned with an external viewpoint. So this is rather, it's a Krishna consciousness is presentation of actual reality, whereas what is called Hinduism is some kind of, like I said, conglomeration of practices and ideas which are loosely based on or related to Shastra, but because they don't accept Shastra in the proper way, therefore it comes out like a big mess. And even they may study the Bhagavad Gita, but they don't get the point. Even a big philosopher like Dr. Radhakrishnan, famous, I mean, he was respected. He was made the president of India because he was a famous philosopher. Just like the present president of India, he's not a political figure, but he was made the president because he's a prominent person in the field of science. And not only science, I mean, he's also, you know, a social thinker, you could say like that. He's an exceptional person. So Dr. Radhakrishnan was a highly respected person for his philosophical contributions. He wrote so many books, but he got it wrong. Even though he appeared to be a good philosopher, I mean, he was good at thinking, no doubt, but he made the basic mistake of thinking that Krishna made a mistake. And if you think that Krishna made a mistake, then all your philosophy all comes to nothing. It all becomes wrong. So, Krishna consciousness is based on the premise that what Krishna says is correct, and we have to accept that. Especially what is in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, because there are many scriptures, and we were just reading this morning, what is that? Jugupsitam dharma kritam. What is that? Jugupsitam dharma krite. I can't remember. So, Vyasadeva wrote so many scriptures which are meant for different people at different levels. but which don't clearly delineate Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so, in a sense, it helps to bring them up. But then in another sense, it keeps them down, because they think, well, you know, this is it. Here it said that, in this Shastra it said to perform yoga or perform karma. And people think, okay, that's it. That's the truth. And they don't see beyond that. So especially we accept Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam as the topmost scriptures, because Bhagavad Gita is Krishna himself explaining about himself, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature, the contribution of Vyasadeva, his topmost contribution, Nigama Kalpata or Galitam Phalam, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge, in which the subject matter is Satyam Param, the supreme truth, who is the summary of the supreme truth is given in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we accept these, that Krishna is to be understood like this. And we may say, well, why should we just accept Krishna? Why don't we have our own opinion? We should have our own opinion. But then our own opinion is always faulty, because Brahm Pramad Vipralipsa Karanapadam. Everyone in this material world, every conditioned person, has the tendency to make mistakes, to be illusioned, to cheat others, and to have imperfect senses. And even such a great person as Mahatma Gandhi, who's very religious, who's observing Brahmacharya, who is a student of Bhagavad Gita, who is very renounced, but he didn't accept Krishna as supreme in all aspects. He didn't even accept that there's any such person as Krishna. So he made, for all his good qualifications, he made a very serious mistake, from which so many other mistakes developed. So if you get it wrong in the beginning, then everything else becomes wrong. Just like the whole modern civilization. It looks great, doesn't it? You know, big car, big buildings and lots of cars, and you can sit in Thailand and have food imported from the other side of the world. All seems great, but what went wrong? Everyone's miserable. Because it's all based on the fundamental mistake of thinking that the advancement of human society lies in economic development and sense enjoyment, which is a mistake. Real advancement of human society, as Prabhupada says in this purport, Aryan. Srila Prabhupada defines Aryan. The word Aryan is applicable to persons who know the value of life and have a civilization based on spiritual realization. So the whole of modern society is based on the mistake of thinking that advancement means to make more and more facilities for sense enjoyment. So the point I'm making here is that we have to accept what Krishna says, and not those of imperfect persons, even if they're very great in the worldly estimation. If they don't accept Krishna, then however great they may seem, then, now in the words of Krishna himself, Namam duskuhino murha prapadyante naradhama maya parita jnana asuram bhavamashrita. Four kinds of impious people do not surrender to me, Krishna says. The foolish people, the lowest among mankind, persons who seem very intelligent but actually whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and those who are just out and out possessed of demoniac nature. So the purport to that verse is very interesting. It's very long. Comparatively, Prabhupada asked that, why is it that there's so many great people in society, philosophers, philanthropists, various intellectuals and scientists, but if surrendering to Krishna is so good, then why don't they surrender to Krishna? Prabhupada asked the question, and he answers that the answer is given here. Because of their perverted intelligence, the tendency to surrender to Krishna does not take place. So we may think, well, I'll bring my idea. Why should I just accept Krishna's idea? I'll bring my idea. But our ideas, they're always full of mistakes, the cheating propensity. Cheating propensity means even if we know it's wrong, we like to advertise as if it's right. Or we like to pretend we know when we don't know. Or we deliberately misrepresent something to cheat others. The whole advertising industry is going on the cheating propensity. They advertise something to be better than it is. So, we can begin to understand reality when we stop thinking we know a lot and we accept that we have to learn. We should learn from someone who really knows. And in the field of spiritual knowledge, we have to accept that there are so many things that we can't learn simply by experimentation. That's why experiments with truth. The whole title, just the title of the book, shows that he didn't know what he was talking about, because the truth is not something to be found out by experimentation. That's also why we don't accept, you see, in Buddhism they accept Buddha, what he says, as being absolute. But we don't, because he didn't refer to Shastra. So many of the things he said, they were actually the same as in Shastra. You'll find in Buddhism the word Dhamma, Pali word coming from Dharma. Then the idea is there of Nirvana. That's before Buddha spoke these words. They're already there in Sanskrit, in the culture he was. Otherwise, how could have people understood the words that he was using? So the concept was already there, but he didn't accept Shastra. And so, we respect Lord Buddha, but we accept that he had a certain purpose, that what he said is not the ultimate truth. There are aspects of truth there, but it's not the ultimate truth, because he didn't delineate Krishna. Of course, this will be very difficult for people in Thailand to accept. We're not going to go out in public and say this to everyone. But at least those who are becoming devotees, they should understand that there is a distinction. Between Krishna consciousness is not another kind of Buddhism or some kind of... Well, actually it is, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Buddhi Yoga. Buddha means the enlightened one whose intelligence is... Buddha comes from Buddhi, intelligence. So real intelligence means, that's described in Bhagavad Gita, to surrender to Krishna. So maybe one way we could present it is that what Buddha taught is a partial representation of the truth. It's a beginning, but there's more to be understood also. Beyond what they conceive of as nirvana, there is actual bliss of surrender to Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. I don't have so much time. What is the time? Quarter past eight. Is it? 8:30, all right. Are there any questions about this?
What is the meaning of Hindu?
Well, Dr. Radhakrishnan, whose name I mentioned a few times, he defined Hindu as an inhabitant of India who is not a Christian, Sikh, Muslim, Buddhist, Parsi, or Jew. He gave a negative definition, but that wasn't considering there are so many Hindus overseas. I mean, Indians overseas. And nowadays there are, you know, so many Hindus, people who consider that in Thailand there are Thai Hindus also.
I asked somebody, said Hindu mean Himsa Sedu, far away from my language.
Hindu.
Himsa Sedu, like that.
Hind. They're a long way from, could mean they're a long way.
Himsa Sedu.
Himsa Sedur. You could also say Hindu Sedur. Hindustan Sedur. But that, you see, this is whoever said that, it's a stupid idea. Because the word Hindu is not derived from Sanskrit. That meaning, that the idea that Hindu means Himsa Sedur, that might have some meaning if Hindu was a Sanskrit word, but it's not. It's derived from Farsi. You know Farsi, the language of Persia, Iran? Farsi, yeah. It's derived from Farsi. So it's meaningless to say this. Why do they say that? Because that's, you know, Lord Buddha wanted to stop the... He decried the Vedas because in the Shastra they're saying Vedic sacrifice, their sacrifice is killing animals. So anyway, it's a stupid explanation. And that's the word Hindu, what is the etymological derivation? You know what that means? The root of the word. How it came into being. It's not known clearly, but it's suspected that it's derived from the Sindhu River.
Sindhu, yes.
Sindhu Nadi, which is now in Pakistan, mostly known. So, those who are coming from the West and invading India, they said, because they didn't pronounce Sir. Just like in Thailand and in China, people have different, they have a different difficulty in pronouncing, they say L. So for Sir, they would say H. So they would say, the people on the other side of the Sindhu, they call that Hindustan. Something like that. So it became out. It came out like that, Hindu. It just meant the inhabitants of the land, which is traditionally called Bharat. And nowadays it's come to mean this, what we call Hindu religion and culture, which is difficult to define because there are so many different ideas about it. Anything else? Yeah, please.
You said that Krishna is the cause of all the causes.
Krishna is the cause of all causes. Well, I read in the purport. It's quoted from Brahma Samhita. Is Krishna responsible for our karma? Krishna is the cause of all causes, but he gives us minute independence which we can use or misuse. That minute independence means we are responsible. Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhukta Drihetu Ruchyate. The happiness and distress that we experience in the material world, we ourselves are the cause of that. So everything in existence rests on Krishna, but he gives a little he gives us a little independence which we can use or misuse. So if you steal someone's car and you get caught and they take you to the court and you can say, well, blame Krishna, don't blame me, that won't fly. That won't be an acceptable excuse. We have to be responsible.
It's actually the answer about we are coming from spiritual world or not.
It's unclear the answer about whether we're coming from the spiritual world or not.
If they say that,
well, Srila Prabhupada was pretty clear about it.
Because they say in the spiritual world there is no Maya, how can you fall down?
There's no Maya, but there is minute independence also. The jiva has minute independence, which means you can use it or misuse it. So there is no Maya in the spiritual world, but there is the choice to serve Krishna or not to serve him. If there was no choice, then everyone would just be a machine. You have to, but if you misuse that, then you come to the world of Maya, that's all. You see, the spiritual world means where everyone loves Krishna, right? So love means that you voluntarily serve him, right? If someone puts a gun to your head and says serve, they'll do it, but that's not out of love. That's out of force. So we have to choose to serve Krishna or not. That choice is always there. And you can use it or misuse it. If you misuse it, then you come to the material world, that's all.
But then Krishna says that he who comes to my abode never leaves.
Yeah, that's what he said. Those who come to my abode never leaves.
So there are exceptions?
No, Krishna says one who goes back there never leaves. But when Srila Prabhupada was asked about that, he said that, well, theoretically they could do, because the independence is always there. That's how Prabhupada explained it. And some people, they want to go and argue about this, but it's, you know, that's what Prabhupada said, and then it's logical enough. And how far can we understand anyway?
Some people explain that this is the spiritual world. It's just
this is the spiritual world? Okay, well, you enjoy it, you know. Become a hog and eat stool.
But it's our consciousness that we're forgetting Krishna. We're making material. But if we're Krishna conscious, then this is the spiritual world.
If we're Krishna conscious, then still in the material world there's birth, death, old age and disease. If we're Krishna conscious, then we'll see Krishna everywhere, even in this material world, but still this is the world of birth, death, old age and disease. The atmosphere here is different to that of the spiritual world. Who says that? He says the material world is the spiritual world. Well, it's a cloud within the spiritual world. That example is given, it's like a cloud. But it's definitely a different atmosphere to that of the spirit. I mean, maybe in one kind of esoteric sense you could consider it like that. But
they say the stadium of football is our temple and the beer is our holy water.
Holy water.
Who said that?
Carmi. No, I would say, Maran. Do you think it's a very high price to pay you know.
Do we think? I don't like to say what I think, because you know, I'm a very tiny little being, and we should rather try to understand what Krishna says and present what Krishna says, because my opinion is always going to be faulty. High price to pay for what? For forgetting Krishna? Sure, it's
a material world.
Sure, it is, definitely, but that's, you know, that's what we want. If we don't want to serve Krishna, then hoya maya das, we become the servant of maya. That's all, we have to suffer that. Then our love for Krishna, that propensity to love Krishna, becomes perverted. That's all. It's the same propensity, but it becomes perverted, and then we have everyone in this material world all trying to be God and all trying to lord it over each other, and in that way there's exploitation and sinful life, and then there's results of the sinful life. Sure it is. It is a big price to pay. That's why we say, be serious about Krishna consciousness. We don't like to accept it because we think that, you know, I'm good, I'm not bad. But we are. Well, we are good by nature, being so intrinsically we're pure souls, servants of Krishna. But coming to this material world is a big mistake. And it's our fault. It's not Krishna's fault. We have to accept that. And, yeah, in ISKCON you'll find people giving you different answers. They'll say that, well, Prabhupada, he said that, but he didn't really mean it, or I don't know. I don't find that very satisfying to say that Prabhupada said that we fell from the spiritual world, but he didn't really mean it. When he consistently told again and again, like when he was asked about this. And previous acharyas, they've also said that. It's not only Prabhupada. It's not like... That's another funny idea, that previous acharyas didn't say that, but Prabhupada had some other... I don't know. If you want, you can go round and round in circles with this question, but as Prabhupada also said, if you, it's just like if you've fallen in the ocean and you're drowning, then get out. If you just try and work out why you're here, that won't be very helpful. The thing you should do is to get out. So why don't we do that? Instead of getting hung up on this or any other question, we should be serious about getting out of this material world. Kali Yuga is very good if we have the right vision. I mean, it's good because it's so bad. If we have the right understanding of that this material world is miserable, then the situation in Kali Yuga can really help to fortify that. So, Kali Yuga, you don't have to be a brilliant philosopher to understand that the material world is miserable when we're living in. Of course, in Thailand, there's like a mass illusion which everyone fortifies among themselves that everything is sanukka. But that's maya. I remember once years ago I asked someone, I was speaking in Thai actually. I remember I used to speak some Thai. I asked her that, well, you're a Buddhist and you believe, you should believe that by eating pig's meat, then in your next life you're going to become a pig. So doesn't that bother you? And she said, no. I said, why? She said, that will also be sanuk. You know what Sanuk means? You live in this country? Means ananda. Pleasure. Everything in Thailand is, the whole aim of life is Sanuk, to have happiness, which means sensual pleasure. So that's the illusion. She's thinking, well, when I'm a pig, I'll be happy as a pig. That's called Maya. To think that being a pig is happy. The pig thinks he's happy. Nice food, nice sex life. And one day they catch him and kill him. You know, at least in India, the pigs run in the street and then they catch them. Then they scream. If you hear them screaming, it sounds like a baby. They scream so loud because they know, now I'm going to be killed.
Italy, they kill a pig with a hammer.
And the pigs, the cows, everything.
And the
yeah, it's extremely cruel the way they kill the animals. Extremely cruel. Very demoniac. It's just a matter of time before the karmic reactions come. There's been so much sinful activity. They had the First World War, the Second World War, and there's been so much sinful activity since the Second World War. When the karmic bubble bursts, oh boy, there's going to be a lot of whatever it is. It's not going to be sanuk. Very heavy sinful reactions. Yeah, the pigs are a little intelligent. They know. Now we have to die. They don't like it. Pigs don't die very easily. So if they kill them with a hammer, then they must hammer them many times. Huh? There used to be a system that they would take the pigs and before they kill them, they would beat them with sticks severely because they said that makes it softer and that more tasty, the meat. Very cruel, huh? Anyway, if we start talking about this, then there's so many horrible things. Okay, alright, so we'll finish there because I have to pack up and go.
We'll do some different.
Yeah, chat in a few minutes. Do you want to show? I have a few books there if anyone would like to.